Well, welcome, friends, to the second episode of the flipping best season yet.
The best flipping season yet.
The best flipping season yet. Well, the flipping's the point.
We're flipping.
We're traveling with Jesus through the gospel stories and the flipping over of the temple. And we're also being sponsored by...
We're sponsored by Danielle's new book, The Other Side of Hope, which is also about flipping, is it
flipping
not, Danielle?
Flipping the script on cynicism and despair and rediscovering our humanity. And is there ever been a better time to do that?
I realized that we like joked about it being sponsored by this book and then didn't mention it at all on the last podcast, I don't think.
We mentioned some things I wrote
in there. We talked about in it, but explicitly. So I'll say buy Danielle's new book.
No.
Danielle
doesn't. Say that.
Okay, Daniel.
This is not an infomercial, people, but I do hope it's helpful. And if you do want to buy a book, like, you know, I go through, like, should I listen to it? Which I have read it out loud myself. So if you want to listen to it, you'll hear me doing that. Should I get it on Kindle? Because I need to travel. When I travel, I don't like taking 6 books with me. I like bringing my Kindle instead. So, but then there are some books that I just choose to buy because I want to read them slowly or I want to read them differently. I want to read them in a hammock or for summer or whatever. This book I would suggest you buy just because it's so cool. The cover is really, really aesthetically pleasing and fun. And it's a flip book. So you flip it around and I don't think you get all that fun in Kindle.
Yeah, you kind of have to jump between the two. It's not the same, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they've sorted it out for you, I'm sure. But like, it's just not, you don't get to flip your Kindle over.
That's
that doesn't work.
Yeah. You turn it upside down. It just doesn't really do anything.
Yeah. And the cover is super cool. The one side is the back of a painting and the other is the front of the painting. It's just kind of fun.
Listeners, I just want to say it's so funny. Danielle's body language shifts as soon as we start talking about promotion or anything. She like tenses up. She's got arm closed. Like, oh no,
stop.
Buy the book or don't. I don't like.
And so moving on, we've also
moving on so that I can relax.
This, I really love this because this flipping the script is, and Jesus flipping the script of what was a leader. So last episode, we really talked about like the anti-leader of leaders, of Jesus being this non-Herculean leader, but also not a violent, which is actually a non-Herculean leader, is refusing to use violence, but still... being the light of the world and not afraid of confronting where corruption and violence is happening. And so we also, I love that idea of like Jesus setting the goats and sheep free.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
A little appetizer to more liberation to come.
Guys.
That's kind of fun. So that was episode one. And this one, we're just going to have a look at Mark's gospel and the Mark account of the triumphal entry.
Yeah, I read the last one. You read this one.
Okay. And then what is actually flipping around here? So this is found in Mark chapter 11. The next day as they're leaving Bethany. Oh, let me just skip actually to Mark 11, verse 15. On reaching Jerusalem, Jesus entered the temple area and began driving out those who were buying and selling there. He overturned the tables of the money changers and the benches of those selling doves, and would not allow anyone to carry merchandise through the temple courts. And as he taught them, he said, "Is it not written, 'My house will be called a house of prayer for all nations,' but you have made it a den of robbers?" The chief priests and the teachers of the law heard this and began looking for a way to kill him, for they feared him, because the whole crowd was amazed at his teaching. Yeah. So it turns out... flipping the tables and flipping the script on, you know, normal traditional religious things is very dangerous work.
It's really not well advised. It's not working out for me at all.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because in the season I've been in local, in some of the exposing that I've been a part of and solidarity with a victim, one of the greatest criticisms of that act has been this idea that it was beneficial to me to do, you know, that I would benefit from it and, you know, it would be good for my book sales and like that there was this like weird narrative that like, this is a positive thing for me to do. And just for the record, there has been a lot of beautiful things coming out of this, namely a lot of victims and survivors being heard and feeling like there's a place of solidarity and there's an emerging beautiful ministry called Hagar's Voice. But also for the record,
You're poorer for it.
This has not been a good decision economically. And this has not been a beneficiary decision that I've made, both for reputation or for, you know, opportunities or for income. So just let the record state. And actually, I'm not alone in this. Jesus, of course, did not also benefit in any way economically or reputation from this action.
I think
because that's not why he did it.
It's so fascinating, though, isn't it? And not to, we won't dwell on you for too long. We'll have the spotlight on Jesus for most of this, or let him be the spotlight, I suppose. But that is just our assumption, right? Well, why is someone doing this thing? Well, it must be for some kind of financial compensation. Like, there's no other reason that someone would do something like this. And of course, you know, in a world of influencers, which I'm told are out there, but I'm a Luddite, so I don't understand such things. We know when someone's saying they like something, it's because someone has paid them to do that thing. Like, you don't really like the mascara. You don't really like whatever it is. Right. You're a shill at the end of the day. Yeah. And so when someone does something, well, I can't understand why they do that thing. It must be because they're getting some kind of compensation I can't know about.
Yeah, that's almost our default, done some right? sort of, yeah, they've done some sort of cost-benefit analysis and have decided that this is better in their best interest, which again, you know, when we read this story, we realize like, whoa, this is gonna take Jesus to the cross.
Yeah.
Like his interest now is you're gonna die.
It's not gonna end well.
And that's right.
I think one of the things we see this is too, Jesus is radically consistent actually all the way throughout. We're currently in the middle of June, which is Pride Month. And one of the kind of jokes right now is how all the Western Twitters and Western Instagrams have like pride flags. So, you know, companies have pride flags, but none of the ones in the Middle East or in Russia.
Derivatives yeah, in yeah. other
so
countries.
Like Starbucks Russia, right. which might not exist anymore, like doesn't have a rainbow flag.
Right.
Starbucks in the UAE doesn't have a rainbow flag. Right. So again, it brings a cynicism that they've done that cost benefit analysis and say, you know what, this will make us more respected and more money in North America, but it certainly wouldn't over there. And we're not willing to be consistent.
Wow.
And I think that's one of the things I'm really making about you. I've noticed an incredible consistency all throughout here. That everything you've done in the last few months is entirely consistent with who you are and also who that book reveals you to be as well. I think the other side of hope only helps illuminate the last few months and again those choices and those people that you've walked with and always walk with.
Yeah, actually that I think you were one of the ones that was like, what did people think you were going to do? You were one of the ones that was like, I don't understand the confusion. Like, that was, I think early on when all that started going down, you were like so confused that people were upset about it. Cause you're just like, what, did you not know her? Like, anyway, so funny. This actually does remind me, like in The Other Side of Hope, there's a whole chapter on sort of maybe the origins in Western thought around cynicism, which is that like loss of faith in other people, which is what you're capturing here is, you know, every time a leader does something, that might be good, we're always looking for the angle.
Yeah.
And I was trying to research this in the book, like where did this actually become sort of a prominent idea that then was sort of, like when did this shift in culture from us just going like, no, leaders are good. Like, and we trust them to like, no, leaders are bad. And we're cynical of all of their motives all of the time. And the little book that I found was the Little Prince, you know, which is a Machiavellian, it's a little pamphlet really, but it is this, the Little Prince is this pamphlet.
The Prince, isn't it?
Oh, The Prince.
I think The Little Prince is.
Oh yeah. It's different. The Big Prince. No, just the prince. And it's just this pamphlet, which I think as I researched it, I think that it was a sarcastic, you know, it was like a way of Machiavelli sort of showing leaders what they look like.
Like highlighting it almost to the point of caricature.
Yeah.
And saying how ugly this thing can be. But then people are like, well, this is good. When imagine the most sarcastic you've ever been and then someone taking you seriously. As like dead seriously, like, oh no, this would be terrible.
Yeah, and basically, like he was basically saying, like, well, one thing he said is you can't be a Christian and a good leader. Now, keep in mind, he was talking at the age where a lot of the popes are actually also the emperor or whatever. Like, there's this like church state thing.
It was a pretty grim time for Christianity, if we're honest.
Yeah, not like now.
Unfortunately, we fixed everything and there's no abusive leaders anymore.
That's so. Right. We're all good now. but anyway, he just basically was like, you can be a leader or you could be good, but you can't be both. You can't be a good leader. There's no such thing. And you have to you have to appear better than you are, because that'll work better in your favor. And basically, it's just all these, it's basically just dripping with cynicism. Mm. And that, all leaders everywhere, if you're going to be a leader. And, the Catholic Church banned this book for, over 200 years, because the book says you can't be a good Christian and a good leader. Mm. And, of course, their popes were the leaders, so that didn't work out. Yeah. But what a great critique of those pope leaders at the time is that you're not living this Christian ethos that you think you are. So the consistency of Jesus to be the kind of leader that we can trust is on display here in the cleansing of the temple in Mark's gospel.
And we spoke last time about the, I believe, radical nonviolence that is definitive and found everywhere in Jesus' ministry. But we can't deny there is certainly disruption here. Cleansing the temple. I like disruption in the temple. I like that prophetic disruption in the temple. I think that's definitely one of the things that is happening here.
Absolutely. And because in all three of the Gospels except for John, which we started with, because he kicks Jesus' ministry off, and we talked about that, the type of leader Jesus is going to be, he's going to be different from any other one that you know. But this is just pre-crucifixion, and this is post-transfiguration,
triumphal entry.
The triumphal entry, right. And so when Jesus triumphal entry, again, it's a different kind of entry. So he is literally using a technique of Roman leaders to come in as these great leaders of war with the captives behind them. And they come in on war horses, and the whole thing is just this big display of violence and power and authority and just that Herculean leader that we're all expecting. And Jesus refuses that and actually subverts it by coming in on a colt, a donkey. Mm. He's refusing the image of triumph in violence, and he's choosing to come as a king of peace. Yeah. And this is where he comes in as the king of peace and then disrupts the temple. And then this is where we can't get it, because we keep reverting back to, then he is the violent overthrower, right? No, he has legitimately said, I am not. I am the king of peace. I am the prince of peace. And I've come in peace. But what does peace mean? And this is where I think this peace is not the absence of conflict comes to play. And again, this false dichotomy of either you're violent or you're you're a status quo keeper.
Yeah.
No, a peace is made, not just kept.
Yeah.
So the absence of conflict is peacekeeping. Just keep the peace, whatever you do. Don't talk about it. Just keep it under wraps. But peacemaking, the Prince of Peace making peace, that's bringing wholeness and justice and freedom and liberation. That's disrupting the status quo to offer something better. And that's what's happening here.
I think what's so fascinating here is where Jesus hones in. I think that's what we want to be looking at. Where is it that Jesus focuses his gaze, and what is it to be revealed in setting our gaze there as well? And the fact that, and again, all the texts actually highlight this, but one of the things he says is how he overturned the temples of the money changers and the benches of those selling doves, specifically those two things, which I think is fascinating. Let's begin with the doves, because I think that's kind of an easier one, and the money changers is more of a punchline, which I think we've really come to enjoy. If y'all are aware of the expectations in the temple, what really matters is the people that were bringing doves, or indeed buying doves, were the poor. Mm-hmm. The dove was...
Because they couldn't afford a lamb.
Yeah.
You could bring a lamb without blemish, or you could bring a dove if you couldn't afford a lamb. That's kind of the concession for people who couldn't afford to bring a lamb. So this is people who couldn't afford a lamb.
And that's kind of a beautiful accommodation we see in the Old Testament. Like, okay, for this offering, this big offering that we're not expecting you to make too often, but you should bring a lamb because that shows how, you know, how much you love God and how much that matters. Often they'd eat the lamb afterwards as well. So it's not like it went to waste. And then, but he also said, but you know what? We recognize some people can't afford a lamb. So if you can't afford a lamb, just bring a dove. So the people that were bringing doves were the people that didn't have much to give in the first place. Mm-hmm. But what had happened is the temple system had become very corrupt, much like most lots of spaces where money and power and religion all collide. Mm-hmm. It only takes a few bad faith actors to start exploiting people. And one of the things that was happening there was that people would bring their dove without blemish because they were trying. Remember, this was required so they could make a sacrifice, so they could worship God. So they're saying, I want to worship God, and here is my dove without blemish. But by this point, this system had become so corrupt that there were inspectors who would inspect your dove for blemishes. So they'd literally like pick it up. And then, weirdly, they'd always find a blemish. But fortunately, there were dove sellers there who had a lot of blemishless doves ready to go at a very inflated price, of course. Mm-hmm. And part of that price would go to the inspectors of the doves. And guess what? Your dove that was with a blemish was just added to the pile of doves that were now without blemishes once you'd bought a new one. It was a thoroughly corrupt system that only exploited the poor and only benefited those who were willing to exploit the poor. And again, we talk about Jesus being consistent. This is not the first time Jesus gets mad at people that exploit the poor. It is not the last time. It is something that clearly grieves him more than anything, those willing to exploit, especially in the name of God, especially those who get in the way of those that want to worship and say, no, this isn't good enough. You haven't spent enough. I'm going to take advantage of what you have. We cannot be surprised that Jesus is turning over those tables. Remember, he's not turning over the dove sellers themselves, but he's disrupting that system. He's disrupting that thing that allows them to take advantage of those earnest people that just want to worship God. That's all they're trying to do.
Actually, when we back to that like sponsorship conversation about all like, right. there was one sponsor that asked me if they could sponsor the show, and that I went to check out their website, and it's all Christian messages on t-shirts and bags, and like it's all like, so I'm just like, oh, that's good, like pray, you know, or I don't know, like seek peace or choose joy or whatever those things are. Uh-huh. And but then I looked into like, where are these products made? Mm-hmm. Sure. You know, like talk to me more. And there's not a hint of, you know, I've got a big issue around fairly traded cotton. Sure. Knowing that the cotton industry and how that works in our Western society is we get shirts for $2 each because there's Bangladeshian women and children in cotton fields picking our cottons as slaves.
Yeah.
And just because we don't see them doesn't mean that's not influencing what's happening. And so I'm like, I try not to wear shirts that are not fairly traded, mm-hmm, in some respect, at least transparent trade routes or something. And yeah, it's hard, but actually it's getting increasingly easier to do because more and more people are becoming aware of this. But this reminds me of like, you know, so there's one thing just in the economy that we're living in, that there already is these exploitative practices around the poor, but it's a whole other level, I think, when you put Christian phrases on shirts that are actually made by exploiting the poor, and you keep those prices low so that people can buy Christian messages on t-shirts that are exploiting the poor. So my answer to that sponsor was no. And also, but it could be yes, if you would change your practices, if your shirts are fairly traded, come back to me.
Yeah.
You know, and by fairly traded, I mean the person picking that cotton is getting a fair wage paid so that the supply chain is just. So I just wanted to throw something like that in there to tell people like, this is not some sort of ancient thing the temple once did and that Jesus exposed it and disrupted business as usual one time and he's done.
And then there was no exploitation
ever again
of people ever.
Because the temple learned its lesson and just said,
and so
no,
did we.
How could we honor God and exploit the poor at the same time and not even be sorry about it? You know, just those little things are just important. And it doesn't mean that we can't honor God. It's just those little things are really important to pay attention to. I went to a worship concert a couple of weeks ago, and it was $47 for the cheapest ticket to sit on the lawn. And I mean, again, like I'm part of conferences that you have to pay to get to. It's not like I'm not involved in this sort of system, but there is something going on inside of me that goes, wow, it cost my family $200 yeah. more to worship. And the merch for sale and like, I mean, the whole thing. I remember years and years ago doing a thing with David Ruiz on sort of the commodification of worship. Mm. And how we've just really in the church, we just tend to commodify everything in the end, including salvation in a way. Oh. And so anyway, that there's a lot of disruption that still needs to happen. And I think sometimes we can get really status quo about it and just be like, it is what it is, which again becomes cynical. But if we were going to stay hopeful in this situation, we might keep that prophetic impulse alive. Mm-hmm. To say that we too are peacemakers and we can make peace where we are. And there are some changes or at least some awarenesses or at least some disruption that could bring light and justice and hope and healing to a people if they were interested.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard. And I think that you're saying that too, even recognizing
it's hard
is good, but it's worth it. And recognizing, yeah, it was hard for Jesus too, I think. Mm-hmm. It was hard in the everything that would follow, but also he couldn't do anything else.
Yeah.
So it's weird. It was an easy decision with some very, very difficult consequences. And I think that's when you're not willing to, again, the irony of you wearing a t-shirt that says "Let justice roll" that was crafted by slaves. It's like, oh no. And we can do this without irony, right? That's the, I'm no better either. Like, to be clear,
we can do it without thinking.
Yeah.
Like, because that's the easiest way. And that, I think that's one of the things is Jesus's intentionality about exposing the practice. Cause I would imagine even people who were caught up in that practice weren't like, not many of them were going like, this is the worst.
Yeah.
They were just going like, well, this is what it is.
Yeah.
And Jesus is like, no, what it is not okay. The status quo is not okay. The exploitation of the poor in the name of me is not okay with me.
Yeah.
And I think that's just beautiful because again, it's a reflection of who Jesus is.
Yeah.
He's not okay with exploiting the poor. He's not okay with the poor being silenced. He's not okay with the poor being excluded. Mm. He's not okay with a conversation about worship that does not involve the inclusion of the poor. And again, like there's so many ways that we could say even today, we just like that. We're just like, well, it is what it is. And it's so sad and the status quo. And I was just interviewing Jai Akmar, in India about, you know, the season that we're in and his thoughts around surrendered and how to be surrendered leaders. And he was saying that one of the keys will be for us to remember that there is no such thing as a local church. That the church itself, by its very definition of God, is global. Yeah. And that if one part of the body hurts, the whole body hurts. Mm. And he said one of the great problems with a lack of surrender in a Western church is that it has not considered itself part of a global church. Yeah. But when your brothers and sisters are starving to death, or when your brothers or sisters are being killed and beaten and their churches are being burnt down, or when your brothers and sisters are being displaced because of war and are, you know, that's happening to you. Mm. This is not that issue over there with those people. This is our issue. So I really think like that was such a beautiful reminder, but I think Jesus, even the fact that he says like that, this is supposed to be a house of prayer for all nations.
Yeah.
Right. Again, we're just like, this is not just a localized issue. This is a global conversation, and anything that involves worship that exploits and excludes the poor is clearly not okay with him.
Yeah.
That's a tipping point when it comes to God. And we need to figure that out and reimagine that and disrupt the status quo to actually to talk about that more.
Yeah.
I really think so. And that leads us to the money.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the money.
Talk to you about the money. Okay, cool. So here's the thing about some of you will be aware that when you went to the temple to worship, to pray, you had to pay the temple tax. And to pay the temple tax, you had to pay with temple money.
So and this is funny because like when we were talking about this earlier, we were like, is that like Monopoly money?
Yeah.
Or like when you go to Chuck E. Cheese, you get like the
You get like Fun Bucks or whatever. Yeah, like when you go to Disneyland, you get Disney dollars, and then you can only spend those Disney dollars inside the park. And they're just a bad idea because, you know, you can still also spend just US dollars that they also accept inside the park. But no, but it's fun. It's not fun. It's just another weird exploitation. But anyway. So I thought that's what the temple tax was paid with. I thought that's what the temple money was paid with, just this special money that was, I don't know, they had their own forge. I don't know how coins work. But it turns out the official currency of the temple, the only coin that was accepted if you wanted to worship at the temple, was what was called the Tyrian shekel. And I realize that none of you are blown away by this and no one cares, but you're going to be, I promise. So no one cares about the Tyrian shekel. Here's the thing about the Tyrian shekel. This is the coin that you needed to worship at the temple. Now, actually, this was just a normal coin minted in Tyre. It's a shekel coin minted in Tyre, hence Tyrian. But the thing about Tyre is its silver mines were really great. They produced really pure silver. So they produce better silver than anyone else. And so what the temple had done is saying, look, if you're going to pay, you got to pay a silver coin, but I want to know that it's pure silver. That's really important. So it was really important to them that this,
the highest valued coin.
Yeah. Like it's got to be this
of silver.
We don't want it mixed with anything. So, so that to me is problematic anyway, that they're not willing to like even get nickel and dime there. Here's the thing about the Tyrian shekel though, because it's not a temple dollar, which I assume would have, I don't know, Moses on one side and the temple on the other. Yeah, in God we trust on the other. Like, why not? What the Tyrian shekel, the official currency of the temple, required, on one side it had the Roman imperial eagle, who, bear in mind, other people oppressing you, the people who are going to worship, they're the ones who are making your lives difficult, taxing you, killing you, enslaving you. So on one side is the Roman imperial eagle. The other side is the face of Baal. It's just a pagan deity. So the coin that you needed to worship God at the temple.
Because it was the most valuable, because it was worth the most money, had the image of empire and the image of Baal, which is a false god.
Which, just so...
God of power, the god that you know, the god that you can control, and the god that will control you.
Yeah.
So those are the images on the coin. So
and look this up, honestly. If you're near a computer, Tyrian shekel, you'll see it's the face of Baal on one side and the eagle the other. I really didn't believe this. Like my friend who's a prof at a Bible college had to walk me through it. Because I'm like, this isn't believable. That's just too much. Like,
the
temple
itself would choose its own currency. And this is the currency.
Yeah, of all the things you chose the one with Baal and the Roman imperial eagle on the other side.
And again, you said earlier in this podcast, like, bad things happen when you mix money with power and religion.
And there it is.
And there it all is in the coin. Like power, which is that empire, right? Religion, which is like the temple, but also Baal.
Yeah.
And then money and currency. And as soon as you mix those things and like, it's a nasty mix. And God literally overthrows it. Like Jesus comes in and literally overthrows. So points out, like disrupts the system that exploits and limits the poor. And then the coins are mentioned in every account. Like there's obviously, but Jesus this is deal. Like, why, this is not the currency of my temple. This is not the currency of God. And this is one of the things even in this season that I've been, you know, just so aware of, is like, what is the power source? Like, what is the currency of the kingdom? And, you know, in my experience of the kingdom, the currency of the kingdom is like, is light, is love, is, you know, hope. This is the other side of hope. Like the currency of the kingdom is these eternal things that last forever. Faith, hope, and love are the trifecta of them. And they actually come together. They're friends. They're like Trinitarian.
They hang out.
And the currency of the world, you know, is power. The currency of the world is money. The currency of the world is this, like, what's it going to cost us?
Yeah.
And how can we salvage it? And where can we, the currency of the world. And so when the church looks more like the world than it does the kingdom, there is a disruption that is needed.
Yeah.
And this is where Jesus, cue Jesus. Jesus will always disrupt the status quo, and the status quo looks like exploitation and corruption and partnership with values that are not part of his kingdom.
A fun piece too is that the pieces of silver used to buy Judas's betrayal of Jesus is almost certainly these pieces of silver too. Can you imagine, like, the money that people have spent to try and worship Jesus is the same, that same system uses that to buy his betrayal, right? It's so.
And then, like, my favorite, like, one of my favorite things to think about is Judas's regret, which I don't think we talk much about, but we should.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he is so remorseful that he returns the money to the temple.
Judas fully repents.
Yeah, absolutely. And he just can't, he just loses hope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, by the way, this little spoiler alert for the book, but like, he loses hope because he just doesn't hang on long enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am absolutely 100% sure that Jesus would have found him right before he found Peter.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And restored him to ministry. And by the way, I'm 100% convinced Jesus did find him.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just
not
on the shores of Galilee.
Just like, had to go a little bit deeper to find Jesus.
He had to go to the depths of hell. That's right. And found him there.
I found him there too.
Absolutely. So. With a word of restoration, no doubt. But anyway, one of the things that happens is Judas returns the silver to the temple, and the temple religious leaders say to him and says, like, I didn't mean to do this. Like, take it back. And they say, what is this to us? We don't care.
We don't
We don't care. We don't want it back. We don't care. And that's that whole thing. Like, we don't care. Our system doesn't want to change. We don't want to know. We don't care about guilt. We don't care about truth. We don't care about your, like, problem with your conscience. We have a system here that we're protecting at all costs. Yeah. And Jesus is like, nope, not protecting this system. As a matter of fact, I'm going to disrupt the system. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to expose the system. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to dismantle this system and start something else because it's so corrupt.
And even the, as a, I think we can have a bit of redemption here as well. So even we hear that the money that was used to buy Jesus's betrayal was in the end, because they, we don't want this, we don't need this. So it was used to buy a field. And that field is where foreigners would be buried. Mm-hmm. And so even that, and if that isn't a kind of how Jesus can and will redeem everything, even the ugliest parts of the mistakes and choices that we make, perhaps, that even that money used to buy his betrayal was given, was used to buy homes so that those who had no home in life would have one in death.
Right.
Like, isn't that like, Jesus will redeem it all, man. I'm convinced.
Right. I'm convinced too, which is what gives me hope, man, which is what gives me hope. But that's that thing about hope being honest and not just happy too, is, and that's, this is Jesus. Like, if we really want hope that will include the poor, that will reestablish worship, that will be a place where the nations will know who God is, it's going to have to be, what exists now is not going to do that. It's going to have to be disrupted. And the poor are going to have to be at the center of the story, not at the margins. And we'll talk again in the next episode a little bit about, like, why Jesus might have felt this so deeply. And maybe why we, and how we could be invited to feel this a little bit more deeply ourselves. So stay tuned, guys. Thanks for listening. This non-boundless affiliated podcast called Right Side Up
right with
Danielle Strickland and James Scholl.
All right.
Has been brought to you by The Other Side Up. Flipping the script. This is the best flipping podcast season yet. Thanks for tuning in.